This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest, Andy Levine, American Seed Trade Association. Andy joins us in just a moment.
Up until this week, many ag economists were thinking that this next marketing year would likely bring on larger U.S. and world supplies of most grains and oilseeds and a downturn in prices. But that was before USDA lowered its previous estimates of U.S. corn and soybean planted acres, taking them
over a million acres lower in corn, nearly 600,000 acres lower in beans.
USDA chief economist Seth Meyer, he says world markets for most grains and oilseeds are already fairly tight.
And that includes the tightening of markets from the war in Ukraine. And it looks like, if we look at balances, that we will continue to be pretty tight for the coming 12 months.
Keeping prices to producers pretty high, even higher than this past marketing year. Gary Crawford, Washington.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Andy Levine. Andy is president and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association. The acronym there is ASTA. I just wonder how many people have heard of a purple tomato.
Well, I think a lot more heard about it this last week, Tony. We had a great decision by the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service regarding the status of Northbrook Plant Sciences nutritionally enhanced, it's genetically modified, but nutritionally enhanced tomato. It's a purple tomato, but it's really got some great health benefits to it, and it was a great decision that USDA was finally able to make and help Northbrook move forward.
And doesn't that just really highlight the innovation that's going on right now in the industry?
It really does. There's a great deal that's going on, especially in that produce arena. Unfortunately, over the years, because of the regulatory structure on the domestic level and the international level, biotechnology has not gone down to the level of fruits and vegetables across the board, whether it's tree fruit or planted, crops that are planted by seed. And because of that, it's been focused mainly on breeding. And we've been able to do a lot with breeding. But as we look at policy toward newer methods like gene editing, we want to make sure that there's that opportunity within the produce arena to take advantage of these breeding methods as they continue to evolve and improve. And we're seeing research in blackberries and raspberries and in things like mustard plants and other crops, tomatoes, that are going to be beneficial from a nutritional standpoint. They're going to be beneficial from a food waste standpoint, as well as from a grower standpoint. So we think everyone will benefit. One of the things that is important here, though, Tony, as I mentioned, is the policy has to be right. If it limits the ability for the industry to use these, it will be restricted a lot like biotech is to three or four crops.
And again, the White House, that executive order on biotech and biomanufacturing, is there anything else we need to know about that?
Well, we always think it's good when the administration looks to focus on the opportunities in the bioeconomy and the bio arena, whether it's biotechnology or biomanufacture. It's really good for the seed industry. I mean, we're a sector of agriculture and food that's based on innovation and constant innovation, and a lot of that comes from the biological or biotechnology arena. And it's important that the government stresses from the very top, from the White House, that the government stresses that the agencies and departments have to work together. So EPA, FDA, USDA need to collaborate in their policy and regulatory development, or you end up with a patchwork that hinders innovation instead of enhances it.
You talk about a patchwork and getting the federal government to work together, but sometimes we have issues that involve states. And at this point, the idea of limiting or banning the use of treated seed, what's happening on that front?
Well, EPA is looking at a petition or a lawsuit that was filed by a non-governmental organization a little while ago to make a decision to take treated seed out of what's called the treated article exemption that's within the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. It's a mouthful, but we call it FIFRA. And that governs the registration and use of pesticides throughout the United States. And it's really a misnomer. It's not an exemption. There isn't a treated article exemption. What it basically says is the act of applying the pesticide on the product, in this case seed, is governed by EPA and controlled by EPA. So the pesticide has to be registered by EPA and approved, and it has to be used when it's applied on the seed in the way that it's stated on the label of the pesticide. And that's where, after that, it's then considered a treated article, and that treated article is used however it is intended to be used. In this case, it's planted as a seed, and it's, you know, it doesn't have to be regulated as a pesticide application, because the application has already been made to the seed to protect it. So we're concerned that states are going to try to pull that out of the treated article exemption under FIFRA and regulate it, so that essentially it would say every time a farmer planted a treated seed, it would be considered a application, and the farmer would have to, you know, have all the proper, whether it's approvals and certifications to make that pesticide application.
You know, again, I think sometimes we get questions, and they can be very simple questions, very elementary questions, but especially when we're dealing with the public, one of those might be, why is treated seed even used? How do you answer that?
Well, when you think about it, as a layperson, when a farmer looks to plant that seed, there's a lot of potential in the genetics of that seed. The performance is there, and you're putting that seed in the dirt, oftentimes coming out of a cold winter. You don't know what's in the soil as far as pest or disease, and what could potentially impact that seed's performance. And if the seed coat is broken by a pest or a fungus, then it won't germinate, it won't sprout, and so you won't get the crop. But by the time the farmer determines that, it's too late to replant, and he has inconsistent germination across the field. What that treated seed does is it protects the seed through that germination standpoint and allows it to germinate and emerge from the ground. It's really hard for anybody to tell what's going to be in my soil 3 weeks from now, once after I plant that seed. So the farmer is going to make an application, whether it's across broadcast application across the field, or whether it's on that treated seed and planted in the ground. We believe it's a really great tool to be able to do it that way. The farmer doesn't have to make the application. They just put the treated seed in their planter boxes and could move through the field. Much less potential for negative impact on the environment and the farmer himself or herself.
Let's switch for just a moment. Still, I guess, talking at that federal level, if you will, but some recent programs and grants encouraging the use of cover crops and maybe other sustainable ag practices. What's that mean for the industry?
Well, we believe that cover crops are a good direction with respect to soil health, soil preservation through the winter, and also improving organic matter. And we've seen a lot of push across the board to try to protect that soil over the winter or when it's fallow, so that you don't have that soil loss and you have some protection there and reduction in compaction. And so that's where the push for cover crops has come over the many years, and a lot of people are looking at it as a tool for soil health and soil preservation and helping remove any leftover inputs that may be still in the soil after the crop is harvested. So working with the grower community, planting cover crops after a harvest in the Midwest of corn or soybeans or cotton is a way to protect that soil, get some green up before that first winter or that first frost, and before winter hits and you get those storms and snow melt and everything else. Keeps that soil where the farmer wants it to be, so that when they come back in the spring, they got a place, you know, good soil there to plant into and good organic matter from the cover crop. And so there's a strong push across the board to make cover crop enhancements, as well as programs available to farmers to get them, encourage them to start adopting cover crop practices depending on where they are in the country. So we saw this in the Deficit Reduction Act. There are some funds there to help various programs. Also, the USDA just came out with over $2 billion of grants to various programs to enhance conservation within agriculture, and a lot of that will be targeted at cover crops and methods to determine carbon sequestration and other things using cover crops. So a lot of excitement around that. Obviously, it's one of those areas where the cover crop community is coming together, enhancing our production capabilities, bringing new varieties to the marketplace, a lot of research being done. and working with farmers to make sure that they're purchasing professionally produced seed and they're getting good quality seed, not seed that maybe have been produced for feed or maybe have a lot of weeds in them.
One other kind of quick question here for you. When we look out at the wildfires across the West, is the seed industry involved in any mitigation efforts as far as that's concerned?
You know, we really are, Tony, and it's really devastating to watch that across the West, especially with the drought conditions and the impact it has on agriculture, but just the impact it has on our daily lives. You know, I sit here on the East Coast in around Washington, D.C., and just this last week, we had the effects of some of the fires on the West Coast because of just haze for a couple of days, you know, with beautiful blue sky in the morning, but in the afternoon, we actually had fire or smoke haze over the city. And we come in as a seed industry, and after that fire and the work that those firefighters have done, and work with the Bureau of Land Management and the states and the Forest Service and others, and provide seed to provide a cover for that ground to get some retention there for that soil to make sure that as you know we move into the fall and winter, snow comes, snow melts, we don't get floods. You got to have something on that ground because those fires are so devastating; they just take everything out. And so our environmental and conservation seed sector of the American seed industry is working strongly with the Department of Interior and BLM to make sure that they've got the proper soil, proper seeds for the soils that they are trying to preserve and bring back to life. And so a lot of activity goes on after that hard work that the firefighters have done to restore that land that has been devastated.
We want to learn more about what's going on, anything we've talked about here, or even finding maybe local seed dealers. Can we do all that online, one place maybe?
You sure can, Tony. Betterseed.org is a great resource. We've got a new one there in case anyone is interested in either conservation seed or cover crop seed. All you have to do is go to our resource tab and under that, find the Environmental Conservation Seed Companies tab and go right in there. There's a map of our companies across the U.S. that produce seed for that sector. But a lot of information there about the issues we talked about today, treated seed, treated article exemption, as well as innovation. So encourage everyone to head to betterseed.org.
Betterseed.org. Andy Levine is president and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association on today's Agribusiness Report.
When you grow cotton, you need a heavy-hitting harvest aid, something that delivers rapid desiccation, that has powerful performance and safe handling. That something is Reviton herbicide. What's more, Reviton comes with a low use rate for greater convenience and efficiency. Hammer home this year's cotton harvest with Reviton. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Reviton. Always read and follow label directions.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Andy Levine with the American Seed Trade Association.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with the American Seed Trade Association online, betterseed.org.
Does the technology and engineering behind Fendt, the most advanced tractor in the world, intrigue you? Do you want to be one of the first to see the future of agriculture? Whether you are a seasoned technician looking for a new challenge or a new mechanic looking for education and opportunity, Livingston Machinery has the career path for you. Visit LivingstonMachinery.com to see available positions and to apply online. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
When you grow cotton, you need a heavy-hitting harvest aid. Something that delivers rapid desiccation, that has powerful performance and safe handling. That something is Reviton herbicide. What's more, Reviton comes with a low use rate for greater convenience and efficiency. Hammer home this year's cotton harvest with Reviton. Learn more at helmcrop.com/Reviton. Always read and follow label directions.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
U.S. milk output is continuing to grow, but at a slower pace
relative to where we thought it would be last month.
USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski says his group has knocked 300 million pounds off this year's milk production forecast, 400 million off of 2023's.
Based on smaller cow inventories.
Smaller than expected, but looking at next year's actual milk production, USDA is projecting output 228.8 billion pounds, up almost 2.5 billion, or about 1% from this year's production. Luckily for the dairy industry,
dairy product demand is relatively strong, especially in terms of cheese.
But not strong enough to keep prices for dairy products and milk from falling a bit in 2023.
And essentially across most of the major product categories, we're anticipating some year-over-year declines in product prices.
And the expected all milk price will drop to $22.70 a hundredweight.
Down $2.75 per hundredweight.
Or about an 11% drop. Gary Crawford, Washington.